Hey, how you doing? Welcome to Golf Nerds. I'm recording this podcast upside down. I've just gotten off the phone after 1 hour in the amazing company of Alex from Orca Golf. We talked the hind legs of everything to do with golf equipment, and specifically helping you golfers work out for yourselves what's important. I've always been of the opinion that I would rather no-name gear that was suited to my game and my swing over the latest, fanciest, shiniest, well-marketed gear that was just off the rack. Alex owns a golf company, so he comes at it from obviously his own angle, but goes into detail about why. And just after we stopped recording, I agreed to bag one of his drivers. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, moving away from these mainstream brands and seeing how awesome it's going to be to have a custom-fitted and custom-built driver just for me. Without further ado, enjoy the next hour with Alex. He is a legend, and you are going to learn stuff from this guy. Alex, welcome to Golf Nerds Podcast. You are living the dream of running a very, very cool golf brand. Tell us about it.
What to say? Orca Golf, born out of frustration. The good friend, Stu, who's currently in Oz now, and he kind of oversees the factories and stuff in China, Japan, Taiwan, etc. And growing the Asian market out of there. Born out of frustration because there's a real gap in the market for proper custom build. Now, there's a huge difference, and I think the Joe public don't appreciate, understand. That's not saying they're not switched on. It's just they've been sold and fed poorly built product, and they buy into these clever marketing campaigns. And tour players hitting a ball a country mile thinking, yeah, I'm going to buy that because it'll do the same for me. Whereas our message is very much about the custom build, not the custom fit. The custom fit is just part of the process, and I hate that term, custom fit, which is what you generally get from your big retailers, such as stores like here in the UK that rhyme with Schmishmerican Golf.
I'm in Panama. We don't even have that.
Yeah, they're very good at supposedly custom fit, whereas custom build is the key. You can have a great fit in with your local pro, and then where their service falls down is the build quality, the monkey in the workshop, as I would say, not building it as it should. And what annoys me about this is you get your average, or not your average, your everyday working man who works hard for his wage, his salary, etc. And in the current climate, I'm not competing against other brands such as Schmalaway or Schmaler Schmade, etc. We're competing against discretionary spend. A guy who, does he treat himself to new irons or does he take the family on holiday? Because the cost of a set of irons from these so-called bigger brands now is somewhat ridiculous and more expensive than going away somewhere nice for a week, you know?
I've been truly surprised by the trend in the cost of decent golf gear. I think you can buy a box set from a supermarket for pretty much the same £100 you have been able to for years, but or $100 or whatever. But you're right, the trend upwards from TaylorMade, Callaway, Cobra, it's getting crazy.
It's, do you know what, I think it's driven by, you know, the cost they pay out. See, the difference is, we don't, you know, I don't have TaylorMade's marketing budget, Callaway's pings, etc. If I did, I'd be the biggest brand in Europe, hands down, because I'll show the industry for what it really is. The problem is these bigger brands, they have so much overheads that they have to ramp up the prices, and the fact that they're constantly churning out what I believe is inferior and, dare I say it, piss poor product. And I'm sorry to use for the language, but that's exactly what it is, every 6 to 9 months. And what's happening is the consumer is losing the will, losing the love, because their product keeps changing. And the pros and the specialist fitting centres are having to restock every 6-9 months, and they're being told they've got to buy into a level of product, and it's just dead money sat on the shelf. No one, absolutely no golfer, regardless of age, gender, ability, budget, should be buying clubs off the shelf at all. You should all, regardless of whether it's for a putter, a wedge, driver irons, you should get custom fit and have them custom built. You will save money in the long run, and your golf will improve massively. Now the problem is these bigger brands, they feel they need to keep churning out product to generate interest. Well, actually what they're doing is forcing the market to its knees, where because there's so much product out there every 6-9 months, you know, the golfer is just getting fed up with having to, or being sold a pup again. This is our latest and longest driver. This is our latest and longest iron. They've done nothing. There's no amount of money being really chucked into R&D in irons, mainly in drivers. All they do is just crank lofts. Yeah, you hit a 7-iron, 190 yards, you're an animal. A 7-iron's a 5-iron loft, you're numbnuts.
Let's build it. I went to I was at a range where there was a Yamaha fitting day going on. This was in Asia.
What were they fitting you for, a piano?
Well, exactly. But, you know, let's just let that slide. And the guy said to me, I guarantee you, you will hit this 7-iron further than the 7-iron in your bag. Now, all he saw was a guy rocking up at the range with 3 clubs over his shoulder. Kind of normal range arrival, but I'm a pro. I'm not in any way the best golfer in the world, but you know, I can hit a ball. And I'm like, really? Really, are you sure? He's like, I guarantee you. I'm like, fine. And he goes, what are you hitting? I'm like, I got these TaylorMades from the tour van last week. Let's, you know, you guarantee me. And he handed me a ladies club. And I'm like, it's just going to go further, but I'm not sure which side of the range I'm going to be able to hit with this. He's like, no, but it's all about distance. I'm like, yeah. It's really not.
Do you know what? I think the sort of the mid-range golfer, that kind of guy who's, you know, offered 28 down to, say, 12, will generally be sold on distance because, you know, men specifically are quite puff the chest out, who's got the biggest one in the park, you know, so that's how they sell product. Whereas poor form, you know, you're just conning the market. And my argument is build it better and you don't need to con them. And, you know, people go, well, I've not really, you know, Orca's very strong in certain parts of the country, certain parts of Europe, certain parts of the world, and in others it's not heard of. And for those who go, well, it's not heard of, how can you be this good? And well, the fact is, look, if I had TaylorMade's marketing budget, it'd be different. But, you know, we just build it better. And if I look on the wall, we have 40 awards sat on the wall across 32 countries. I've beaten Ping, TaylorMade, Callaway, Mizuno. I've beaten them all. I've got nothing to prove. I just don't have endless amounts of money where I can make clever marketing campaigns, con the market in for you buying my product. Actually, what we do is we create a proper brand family, and all those who have bought into Orca around the world feel like they're part of something. On social media, they're known as Orcarites, hashtag Orcarite. If you go look it up, there's this gathering, this brand fans that feel like they actually belong to something. They're not just another sales statistic. And it's how we build it, how we care for our customers, but also how we educate them. We don't, funny enough, we don't sell golf clubs as much as daft as that sounds. We educate. And for every guy who's been for fittings and we educate them the Orca way, they open their eyes. And when we show them how poorly built their mainstream brand clubs are, it's laughable. Now, admittedly, these brands can build better quality, but they need to employ more club builders because of the numbers they have to churn out. So I don't believe, you know, and this tolerance of plus or minus, I have zero tolerance for. I think if you're investing £1,100, £1,200 into a mainstream brand, there is zero excuse for the poor build quality.
Completely.
And it's just not acceptable. And what happens is, no one in my eyes in the industry has a swing fault. Okay, I don't believe anyone has a fault. They're characteristics. Because there's no preset manual to say this is what a golf swing should be. Who's to say a draw's better than fade, fade's better than draw? Who's to say if your swing's flat, a flat swing's better than an upright swing, vice versa? It's irrelevant. The most important thing is they're known as characteristics. And my biggest belief is these characteristics are born from starting with badly fitted equipment that's badly built. And my message is simple, just get custom built and understand what that's included. Certain things like frequency matching, spine aligning, MOI, swing weighting, sharpuring, weight sorting, all these things are what we do as absolute standard across our sets. And there's only three types of fitting you should really be looking at. Static fit is a load of rubbish because we don't hit balls stood still. It's okay. A dynamic
so
fit.
So let me pause you there, because I know exactly what you mean by that. But explain what a static fit is.
So a static fit is where you stood still, arms down side, you take an overall height and wrist to floor measurement, and it's kind of put against a very well-known brand launched the color chart, which back in the day was genius, absolute genius.
Color chart it's a great starting point.
It's a very good starting point, and this isn't me defecating on that or proclaiming to say what I do is the best. My results prove that. However, the Ping color dot chart, it is very good, credit where it's due, for a starting point. The issue I have is we don't hit balls stood still. Your static fit compared to a dynamic fit is two different animals.
So then a dynamic fit, what's that?
That is where you're taking into consideration all the individuals stood in front of you, as well as their height, wrist, etc. What is their initial swing movement? When they get to the top of their backswing, do they tend to lean left and cast over the top? If they're 6 foot, you know, 6 foot and they lean left and cast over the top, are you really going to give them a longer club that's flatter? Or more upright. If it's upright, the heel digs in, the face closes. There's dynamically, we need to look at the swing characteristics of the individual rather than just looking at their height, wrist to floor, etc. Because there's so many factors, and underneath that dynamic fit, you have three options. You have a power fit. If someone comes to me or any one of my guys and says, you know, look, I need more power in my irons. It's not about cranking lofts. We look at making their clubs longer and flatter. Let's get them swinging it wider so the club generates more energy before it's delivered through the ball. If someone comes to me, we want accuracy, then we look to make the club shorter and a bit more upright. That will give them accuracy. It's just like a driver. When we want it, you know, drivers used to be 44 inches long. Now they're 45. Let's hit it further. If someone wanted to hit their driver less and be more accurate, they generally have a shorter driver. I played a season and a half with a 43-inch driver, hit more fairways, lost 15 yards, but I was in play. Mm. And I think that's the accuracy. And then there's the optimal fit, which is a blend of finding the perfect match between the two, between accuracy and between the power. So it's down, I think we're lost in, or a lot of guys are lost, and they just go to these fitting centres with guys who, to be fair, don't really fully understand it. The organisation, which I did my training at, doesn't understand custom fit one iota, but that's where they go for their training. And, you know, there's not enough quality coming through, but there's a lot of very, very good club builders around the world who I could highly rate. For, you know, I'll just give you a few. You've got Kevin Redfern at Pinnahill, build on tour, phenomenal club builder, fitter. Gabriele Sorbara in Italy, Scott Gourlay in Scotland. That, you know, there's so many, Joe Gwok in the US, are these specialist club builders and fitters that know their onions. And I think it's having your clubs fitted and built by someone who's done the whole process is massive. The club build is the big, big, big important thing here. Whereas we get wrapped up into clever adverts. Oh, this is the longest iron. This is the longest driver. For who? and all the stats in the industry, certain spin stats, ball speed stats, this really annoys me, is based on the 1% of elite golfers in the world who play on the PGA Tour. What the hell are we doing basing our industry averages and standards on the 1% of golfers in the world, when actually the rest of the 99% of the industry in which my business relies on, which every other brand's business relies on, why are we not using them as a standard and using their stats, gathering data? It doesn't make sense. Why should we, the average 18 handicapper, be trying to hit it as quick and spin it as ideal as a tour player? It's never going to happen.
I see a lot of people saying, oh, like, I spin my driver at 2,000. And like, that's great if you've got... I was trying to be too techy, but Rory McIlroy's club head speed. But if you've got my club head speed, it's rubbish.
The ideal spin for a driver, and you know, not many, and I'll argue black and blue, and I'll take on any brand and step up with them and show them, because actually what we're doing as brands is we need to stop conning the market. Not a lot of them do, a lot of them don't. I'm not pointing any fingers at certain ones. But what we need to do is get a proper average based on the industry. Now, you know, I've studied years and, you know, a good 10 years of what is that? What does that look like? And here in the UK, or especially on the PGA Tour, people are saying, well, you need 1,000 spin for every number on the bottom of the club. Well, a 7-iron here in the UK spinning at 7,000 goes nowhere because the air's cold. We get 8 weeks of the year where it's nice weather. Yeah, it's a bit grim and miserable, yes. Like my first marriage. And I think what we need to do, what we need is 1,000 less. And I see results with guys spinning a 7-iron at 6,000 RPM, killing everything else. And a driver should be 1,900 to 2,300 spin. That's the ideal. And I think until we spend more time with the actual golfing public and doing more general testing with them to build up an actual industry standard average, we need to stop being sold on tour players, because 99% of the golfing public will never be a tour player.
You're so right. And this is something, I'm not sure if we swap messages about. I think we're all guilty or lucky enough to use the TrackMan charts when we're talking about fitting in students. But I use LPGA ones with my male students because they're a closer fit.
Yeah. I think...
Go on.
Stats, I don't pay much attention to stats because it's like... If we're using tour player stats to try and sell equipment, and this is what the ideal is, that's like me rolling a Skoda up to a Formula One driver going, come on, you can make this win a race. It isn't going to happen. Now, until we pay attention to the golfing public, we're just going to be banging our heads against a wall. And, you know, golf is it's a sport. It is the most rewarding and most frustrating sport in my eyes, because it's not a team sport, it's an individual sport, and it's you against the course, the conditions stood in front of you. And if you're playing with tools that aren't built for you, it makes the game so frustrating. It's like, you know, I think for me, I liken it to taking your car to a garage to have a new gearbox fitted. You've got two garages beside each other. You've got one with all the tools, really grubby, all messy garage, but he's got all the kit, compared to one next to him looking fresh as clean, super shiny, but he's going to fit your gearbox with a teaspoon and a wok. It's not going to happen, you know? So step away from the clean, shiny numbers, which all seem fancy, and actually pay attention to the dirt and grit, because that's where the data is. And when we design clubs, you know, our vision has always been, we're going to give absolute premium quality product built properly, but for everyday man prices. We're not here to sell a club for $500 a piece, a set of irons for $3,500, a driver for $800. It doesn't, that's not what it's about. We create a brand following. Price becomes irrelevant in many ways because it's built properly, but it's priced properly. And I think it's hard work for the industry pro who will do his pre-book at the beginning of the year, buy into 10 grand with a product. At the end of the season, he's still sat on 6,000 quid's worth. The rep walks in and he says, oh, we've got a new deal. Well, look, I've still got 6 grand worth of crap sat on the shelf from the last deal. You know, these the pros are losing faith and getting tired of acting as like banks for these bigger brands who keep churning out product year after year. Ping are very clever. I like the fact that they alternate between G and K. It's very good. That's a good, strong model. And we should take sight of that. You know, my cycle's every 2 years, 2 to 3 years.
I think it's hard to ignore the quality of the brand of Ping. If I was buying golf clubs retail, I struggle to not buy Ping. If I was walking into American Golf or PGA Superstore with my hard-earned money that I'm going to spend 100% retail price on, I would really struggle to look beyond Ping, just because they've got a great legacy.
I think they've got a very good legacy. They don't try and all over the eyes on the industry. They're very good. I think Ping are very well suited for ladies, seniors, beginners golf. I think that's their market. They're very strong there. You know, I'm not a fan of the materials they use to make the heads. That's not my... again, blaspheming the brand or saying they're terrible. I'm just not a fan of the materials. You know, I make only one cast club in my range, made from 431, which is bendable, nice soft cast. Everything else is forged from premium materials. You know, when we work with guys, we don't want them holding stock. There is no stock holding policy. It's just a fitting kit. And guys are just like, well, and our price of our fitting kit's a joke. And people are like, how can this be? What's the catch? Well, look, there is no catch. We tailor our business around yours and its needs. But guess what? We're going to support you, not just give you your kit, walk away, and then go put it into someone else 2 miles down the road.
And just to explain to the listener, that's the way your Club Pro works, or your local golf store. They will generally, and there's always exceptions, buy the fitting bag. The fitting bag they've got set up in that booth, they paid some money for. It may be discounted if they're a great customer. It may even be free if they're a fantastic customer. But generally, there is a cost associated to that bag.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, most demo kits, if we take, you know, a Callaway kit might cost you £3,000 to buy into, you know. Our premium iron kit with all the interchangeable shafts, the POS shelving, all the heads you need is £550.
That's amazing.
To put that into perspective, that's fully interchangeable, fully usable, super easy to use, and you sell your first set of irons, you've made your money back. So after one set of irons, you're into clear profit. Now, it's mad. People are like, well, where's the catch? Look, there is no catch. We just want you to earn a living from hardware. And the way we look at it is, when someone decides to stock Orca and someone decides to buy Orca, the consumer, we get humbled. It's our privilege that they want to stock it and someone wants to buy it. It's our privilege. Whereas the bigger brands see it as your privilege, the pro, to be selling their equipment and stocking their equipment. It's your privilege. Well, hang on. That needs to stop, because without these pros, without these specialist centres and these retailers, we as a golf brand would be nothing, as would Callaway, TaylorMade, Ping. All of the golf brands would be nothing if it wasn't for these retailers. So they need to, and this is where I get a bit passionate and angry at times, these bigger brands need to pull their head out of their backside, take a breath and realise without people like this, they would be nothing. So start looking after them, start treating them properly, which is where we are. You know, with every guy who buys a demo kit, I'll personally go along and train their staff. I'll personally give them a demo day out of my time. Not my sales team, not my guys on the road. I'll come and do it for you. And that's a real eye-opener. That's the special touch, the extra they get for very little. And they go on and sell it. And they feel like they can earn a living. They're selling better product that outperforms pretty much 95% of the stuff on the market we are outperforming. The one downside, and it's our biggest flaw, is we just don't have a big pot of cash to go and scream about it. So we grow it more individually through social media, talking to people, word of mouth, you know. And I'm certainly not here to say we're the best thing since sliced bread, no one's better than us. I'm not that naive. But what I will say is what we do, no one else will or can, because we're unique. I don't see other brands as competitors in my market. I don't need to worry about them. You know, people go, well, how do you be successful? Simple, focus on your own, I won't say the word, but, you know, focus on yourself rather than your competitors. And just, you know, treat people right, look after them, give them good product for good value, and you'll get a customer for life, which is what we have with our brand fans. And I think the industry is going full circle. You know, no longer are pros stocking equipment, no longer are guys buying stuff offline. You know, those keen golfers want to be fitted and want to have their clubs built properly.
See, I've often said, and this has been cynically, but I stand by it, the major retailers, your big PGA Superstores, your American Golf, etc., 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 started pushing fitting, not building, just club fitting, around the time online shopping got big. And there's a big reason for that, is you basically can't fit online. They wanted people to come into their shop and to spend money. But in your market, you're not after someone buying a $300 set of dollars in a box from a shop, because you've got to build them. And it's you're just completely outside of that world. That's how it appears to me.
Yeah, I mean, there was a hilarious tweet, and I generated a lot of footfall for it, when a certain superstore was, what should we call our in-house specialist, master club fitters, master expert club fitters, equipment technicians. And I jokingly replied saying, what next, KFC calling their people chefs? You know, it's like, come on, I think the industry... These guys are here, they're driven to sell product in retail outlets because they're just gathering dust on the shelf. It needs to be gone. And that's wrong. You can't be doing that. If you want repeat custom, strong brand fans, loyal custom, look after them and give them genuine, honest advice. Don't sell them a product based on yardage. Don't sell them a product because they hit this well. If you ever go for a fit in one of these stores, they get you hitting balls and they put strike tape on the face, and all of a sudden you hit this 7-iron 200 yards. So they go, yeah, that's the one for you. That's the one you need to buy. That's rubbish. The tape on the face takes the grooves out of place. So you're going to get no spin and the ball will go a country mile.
Yeah, it's exactly like putting Vaseline on your driver.
Yeah, it doesn't. Stop being blinded by numbers. And anyone who ever wants to, whether they buy Orca is irrelevant in my eyes. My message is be educated and go and seek proper advice from club specialist club fitters, not your main retailer ones, and specialist club builders. And get your clubs custom built, not just custom fit.
And let's focus on that custom build in relation to Tour Pros, because that is the essence of the tour experience for the pro. Is TaylorMade golf clubs, for example, any of those, but we can use TaylorMade as an example, it's the first one that came to my head, are pretty much as good as anyone else's. But when you buy them in a shop, in PGA Superstore, the tolerance is you're getting just a package that's not been through QA.
Right, pretty much, because they have to churn out certain numbers to meet demand. You know, for me to properly build a set of irons from scratch to in the box, ready to go out the door, it will take me about, with drying time, two to two and a half hours. That's QC check, everything, every tolerance, where I'm drilling weight out of heads, frequency matching, swing weighting, etc. All these terms are what go into a proper custom-built set. And that's what we do as standard. Now, I will quite happily tell someone, look, your irons are going to take 7 to 10 working days, but guess what? They're going to be absolutely spot on. Your clubs will be in because they've been cut down and chucked a grip on and sent out the door. It's just poor form. You know, if you have a new kitchen fit and the guy cut the worktop, you know, 5 centimetres too short. He's like, don't worry, I'll just fill it in with mastic. You won't know. No, mate. I want it looking spot on because I'm paying a premium. We shouldn't be accepting of these tolerances. You know, what it doesn't make sense. If I'm investing, you know, £1,000 to £1,200 on a set of irons from a well-known brand, that's a lot of money. That's, you know, in a lot of places, that's someone's monthly salary. You know, so just do it right. Stop trying to con these guys and stop giving them inferior product. Stop cranking lofts and learn to build clubs properly.
Because that's what the best in the world actually have. You're comparing your tailor-made, whatever, what are they on, their P7 whatever series. The ones you buy in the shop are the same as the ones in the tour van, except the ones in the tour van have gone through so many more checks and controls.
They are the same to some extent. Now, you know, I'm not going to name certain brands. I'm certainly not that stupid and don't want to cause any issues. I do like antagonizing the market. I'm well known for that. And I do like winding people up just to create a reaction and a healthy debate, only because I'm quite passionate about protecting the golfer and giving him proper product. But there are certain brands out there in bygone eras who've had their clubs made elsewhere by specialist foundries and stamped with their logo and given to certain tour players because they need these tour players playing well so they can shift consumer units. How
yeah.
it's done.
Yeah, you're
you know,
right. I knew about
tour,
that. Yeah.
The stuff on tour, the average golfer in the retailer environment will never get, never touch, sniff, smell, or have anything anywhere near as good because it just... it's just never going to happen. Whereas for us, regardless if we have elite players playing on some satellite tours, what they play with, the average golfer can buy, and it will be built just as well. That's the whole point. Why should one person be, you know, why should tour get a certain product and the industry get another? If you really want your product to perform and you want to create happy customers, give them what you give everyone else. Build it as well as you build everything else, supposedly. And stop pulling wool over the industry's eyes. It's just, it's shameful. It's embarrassing at times, you know.
Because then, this is, I think, you see a tour player using an 8-year-old set of irons, and you take that fact and you put it in a box as a consumer and then say, oh, but I need the 2019 model. But you don't. What you really need is clubs made as well as that tour pro guy's got 8 years ago.
Yeah,
and they will last you 8 years, and they will still perform, unless there's a huge leap in technology, which I think is unlikely, they'll still perform as well as something 8 years down the line.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, technology hasn't changed really in irons since 2006-07 maybe. There has been no huge revelation in R&D. It's a load of crap. Most of the brands are spending their R&D on driver and golf ball and shafts, well, you know, OEM shafts. That's where the money's spent. Irons, all we can do with irons is make it look pretty, move the weight about, and make sure the grooves are correct. I no longer mill grooves, we press grooves, so we know they're all conforming. So we're governed on what we can do to certain aspects of the club. The R&D is all in the driver. Now, interchangeable drivers, people need to listen to me when I say this, are useless.
Yes.
Because if the minute you move the shaft, you've moved the spine of the shaft, that driver becomes no good. Being a certain brand, TaylorMade, just may as well say it, when they bought out I think it was the R11 with the red triangle movable plate on the bottom, that was genius, being allowed to open and close loft by raising and lowering the head. Very clever. But allowing someone to undo a shaft, move it to create an ad loft, and then screw it back in is pointless. That driver, that product becomes completely useless. Interchangeable, being able to adjust it, does not work. You don't know where the spine of that driver, that fairway or hybrid, has moved to. So good luck.
I completely agree. I had my driver shaft aligned and it stays there. Even though I actually think I'd like a little more loft now, I know it'd be foolish to move it. It's just a mug's game, isn't it? And I paused because I didn't know one of 20, well, not 20, but many reasons to rail against adjustable drivers. My usual go-to is lie angle, but they're just a bad idea.
Yeah, they are, but what happens is the men just like to fiddle with stuff. We like to play around, undo stuff, put it back together. It's just smoke and mirrors and I'm very well sold. Gadgets. The blokes love gadgets. We buy golf clubs like women buy handbags. And, you know, if we can change it and play around with it, great. It's just another selling tool, but it doesn't work. It doesn't, the product does not perform. You don't see tour players adjusting their drivers. You know, they get it fixed. They find the right spine.
Yeah, glued, you see it on practice drays and then they take it back to the van and say, can you build that up for me?
Yeah, that's how it goes. And I think, you know, it's... I think we're blinded by the tour and the product they use and these clever marketing campaigns. It doesn't work. Before anyone invests into any golf product, they should go seek proper advice, try out as much equipment as you can, find the right shaft. And there's the key to the club. I liken a golf club to a car. The club faces the steering. The shaft is the engine, the human's the fuel. If you don't have the right mix of the three, your car's going to underperform. You can have a great engine, terrible steering, and great fuel, car's useless. You can have a great steering, great fuel, rank average engine, car's not going to perform. You can have great steering, great engine, and an average driver, car's not going to perform to its maximum. Getting the three of them right, getting the right steer in the engine to work with the right fuel is key. And that's what a golf club is. And too many people don't. They just kind of go look in a flashy magazine. Oh, that's won a gold award. I'll go buy that one. This iron proclaims to gain me 12 yards. It gains you 12 yards because it's no longer a 7 iron. It's a fire, a ninja suit wearing a number 7 on the bomb. Get your clubs checked, get them built properly, and you'll perform better.
Now, you mentioned something that is my favourite marketing lie, which is Titleist, I'm happy to say it, claim that cast is just as good as forged.
Right, okay. And not to sound horrible, Susan Boyle in a bikini, it looks just as delicious as Jessica Alba in a bikini.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, and that there is quite a bit else, you see, it's much more difficult to bend a cast iron. And then this...
Look, the cast iron isn't horrendous. It's just very, very hard material.
Yeah.
Anyone who tells me a cast is just as good as a forged needs to sit down, pour themselves a cup of tea and have a rethink. You know, the feel of forged, nothing can be compared to. It depends on the golfer, however. You know, is a forged blade as good to an 18 handicapper as a cast? No, it isn't. But it's not about it being as good as. It's about the individual golfer, what's best for them. What I like, you might not like. The average day punter might not like. What they like, I might not like. It's completely irrelevant to what I say, you say, or anyone else says. It's down to the individual stood in front of you. But when a brand says cast is as good as forged, that's stupid. That's like saying a Skoda's quality or a Skoda is just as fast as a Porsche. It isn't.
It was actually an advert for Vokey Wedges that I saw where they were claiming that, I think they named Mizuno, but I can't remember that. But it's clearly aimed at Mizuno, because Mizuno say we forge is best. And they were saying, oh no, you may have read that forged irons feel better, but we tested with two tour pros, one of which was on us, both of which were salaried by us, and asked them to say, and guess what they said? Our clubs were just as good. Titleist bastards when it comes to that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Well, I mean, anyone who knows me knows what I say. I call them shitelist.
I put that on Rick Shields's Instagram.
It's when we buying their number one ball on tour. They're the number one ball on tour because they go to tour players, play our ball, wear our glove, and it's $50,000 as well.
No, I actually sincerely disagree with you there. It's okay. Not because they go to tour players, it's because they go to schools.
Okay. The elite players coming up, the younger lads. I get what you're saying, but I'm on about the actual PGA Tour and stuff like that.
Yeah, but once they've got them at age 14, like, I understand. You can't say a Pro V1's a bad ball. It's not. And lots of people, you do sort of trust your golf ball. And if you know you've got this golf ball that works for you with this company that kind of supported you since you were a kid, and if you leave them, they won't have you back. You're not going to leave. It's a bum deal they do. They it's literally like the way drug dealers work. They give the kids the cheap gear when they're young, so they've got them hooked when they're better.
Yeah, the hardest thing is, you know, I'm not in the industry to slate other brands, call them names, and I have my opinions on other brands. If no one's buying Orca, there's only other two other brands I ever tell them to go buy, and that depending on what level of golfer they are.
What are they?
But there's a lot. Okay. Well, we'll get it out there. If you're a senior lady or a beginner and you're not buying Orca, I say go to Ping.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a better player in like a Forge Club, I say you go to Mizuno. I call them Mizuno. Who know, because we just outperform them. But yeah, Mizuno. Anything else outside of that, I just avoid like the plague, because it's just poor quality. And it's inferior product. And it just doesn't make sense. You know, these guys are, you know, every brand has a strength and a weakness, you know, and you could rattle through them. My strength, you know, and I quite happily say it, our strengths are our irons and wedges and putters. Our woods were still developing and getting better. Our reflex driver this year is an absolute animal. We've taken massive strides to improving that. I'm not saying I'm the best driver. I'm not. But depending on the individual, our driver stacks up very well. If you look at TaylorMade, they own the driver market. Titleist own the wedge market and the ball market. Mizuno, very known for their irons. Ping, known for their cast irons. It's, you know, every brand has a strength and weakness. But I think what every brand should be doing is paying more attention, not only just to the stockist, but the consumer and listening to them. And I think we need to get away from changing product every 9 months and trying to screw the guys out of their hard-earned again, because, oh my goodness, this one's the next latest and greatest. It's better than last year's because of X, Y, and Z. It's not. It goes further because you've cranked it more, you've stuck another medallion on it, and you think you've come up with something fancy.
What if they've painted it black? Surely that makes it better.
Yeah, well, especially in hot sunny days, you know, the glare. If it's black, it takes a little bit of spin off the ball, and you know, chrome ones put a bit too much spin on.
Cool and tour pro.
Yeah, and also you need to obviously make sure your golf ball's got the right amount of dimples on.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean, I think I told you this in private, but I've been pretty brand agnostic about golf balls. But was happy to say, no, you need to play a decent golf ball. But which decent golf ball do you play? There's not much in it. Pick one you like or pick what's cheap. And then last week I played 9 holes with a precept distance ball. Basically a Sirlin 2-piece ball. I hit, I laid up on the 10th. It was the back 9. Then hit my wonderful 7-wood from 180, and it landed on the front of the green. I thought, that is 20 yards through the green at least. And I got there, and it was in the middle of the green, a few feet from the hole. I'm like, how did that stick with that golf ball? Next hole, hit 9-9, it was a par 3, ball landed, stopped dead. And I'm like, what the flip? I'm changed. I'm a convert man. I'm gonna buy myself a dozen 2-piece balls and give them a crack.
Yeah.
Why have I been paying money on Pro V1s or whatever?
But it's, I think, again, buying into that sort of this is the number one ball is because that's the marketing, and people go, well, if they play it and it makes them great, maybe it'll make me great. I think it's just marketing. But clever marketing sells, and it's just clever stuff. Whereas we do all our stuff via social media and we grow it organically, partly because we're hamstrung by not having a $50 million marketing budget. And also, I won't pay tour players to play my stuff. But I'll tell you what I will do to a tour player. I'll build your clubs that'll make you win.
Yeah.
How about that?
Exactly.
And it's, you know, I think it's, and pros as well, I feel sorry for the industry because, you know, the guys, they'll go and give an hour's fitting to a guy, and he'll give them a price, and that customer will walk away and go, yeah, I'll just speak to the wife, make sure I can buy this. The first thing he does is when he gets home, jump online, tries to find a cheaper price and price matching. The pro's up against it with online sales. And I think, you know, the when a pro asks for someone for 25, 35, 40 quid for a fitting, pay it and don't moan about it. You don't take your car to the garage and hear your mechanic go, yeah, buy the gearbox and the wheels and I'll give you the labour for free. It doesn't work. You're paying for that mechanic's knowledge, skill base, etc. So when a pro says to you, I'll give you a fitting, it's whatever the price is, pay it and don't complain. Because actually he's giving you his knowledge, his advice, and he's going to give you sound knowledge and advice. And then maybe support him and buy your product from him. And you'll get, you know, you'll get great service on the back of it. And I think that, you know, which is where we're all driven to save a pound. I get it. I understand it. But sometimes we just need to...
I think if you care about your golf game, you should be aware that the clubs you buy online are just thrown together with numbers stamped on them, and the lofts and lengths may or may not, or swing weights more to the point, may or may not relate to what you've just bought. If you buy them from your pro, let's say you spend 15, 20% extra to buy them from your club pro, you can ask him, could you check the loft and lies on them before you give them out? And he's going to say, yes, thanks for coming to my shop. And if he doesn't, buy them online.
Yeah. I think the crack is just, my biggest piece of advice would be get custom built. It's that simple. Don't never buy anything off a shelf. Don't just go to someone who, yeah, we can fit you. Just hit balls, look at launch monitor, what gets you the furthest.
And guess what? You happen to be regular with Standard Loft and Lie. Guess what? We've got some of them in now.
Yeah, the thing is, you should work out, what do you want from your clubs? What do you want from your game? If you already hit it a long way, you don't need distance. You'll probably want accuracy or a better ball flight. So go get custom built for a better ball flight or more accuracy. If you need distance, go get fit for that. Don't be just walking in and be sold purely on what goes the furthest. Oh, and I just happen to have those on the shelf. Of course you do, mate. It's about getting your irons custom built. Invest your time. Speak to experts. Don't just buy on a whim.
Now,
that's the key.
Alex, I've just had an idea to wrap us up. I want to evidence your knowledge to the listener. I'm not able to buy golf clubs from you because I live across the pond. But so, yep. I'm going to talk you through my fitting and you can just tell me the genius that you're going to say. So I, a year ago, spent a day with Michael Neff from Gears Golf.
Okay.
And he fit me. So if I was using a standard length, so let's say 37-inch 7-iron, off the Cobra fitting bag, and at the end of it, he's like, Flex, I put, you need to be softer than the what's in, and it was a C-taper 120 stiff, so I put you in this shaft, you should go regular, and shockingly, I need to bend this 6 flat to get your toe at zero. At impact, but obviously you could change the length of the shaft to accommodate.
Of course you can.
But distance is my problem. Ball striking isn't. So I kept the shaft length, and I have the flattest golf clubs you can find. You may not be surprised to hear I struggle to get a fairway woods.
Okay.
Because you can't bend them.
Depending on you can, but if the if the hosel's welded onto the wood after, you can't, because they'll just snap off. There are other people who make woods where you can bend the hosel.
I tried some wishing woods.
Yeah.
And as much as I wanted them to be awesome, they were just not quite... They just weren't quite as good.
What we don't realise, or what a lot of the general public don't realise, or the amateur golfer, dare I say, don't understand about certain shafts is flex. Someone might look at me and go, man, he's 6'3", an absolute animal. he swings it a certain, oh, he needs X flex iron shafts or whatever. It's completely irrelevant. All flex does is stop the head moving through impact.
Yeah, exactly.
I can give you a heavier regular shaft that will feel stiffer than a light stiff shaft. Second thing, if I give someone a lighter shaft, they will naturally swing it quicker. But if you give someone a lighter shaft, it moves all the weight towards the head, so the club will feel generally heavier. If I give you a heavier shaft, it removes weight from the head, if that makes sense, and makes it feel like it's more in the hands. So the weight of the shaft is the most crucial point, the weight and the characteristics of that shaft for the individual golfer. Then it's flex. People look at flex first too often. They look at someone and go, man, he's massive. He plays off six. He must have an X flex or a stiff shaft. I know tour players who play regular shaft.
Yeah, me too.
It's the flex is irrelevant.
Freddie Couples won Augusta with a ladies three wood.
Yeah.
And I out-hit pretty much any amateur I play with. Not that I'm a long hitter, but it's just, you know, I've got...
Yeah.
Have I got regular through the bag now? I've got stiff shafts in my wedges because I haven't changed them yet, but I will do next time around. Regular all the way from gap wedge through to my three.
You shouldn't be playing. We don't. This baffles me. We don't swing all our irons in our bag the same speed. Okay.
No.
So there's something I'm looking at. It's called back cutting, rather than all tip cut. Let's back cut. It's, you know, we don't swing our wedges the same speed we swing a six iron. So why would we have the same spec shaft in those than our irons? You know, there's so many different variable factors in having your clubs built for you.
And this comes down to one thing, is the reason I've been cautious to change my lob wedge, my 59, from a standard tour-issued S300, is I just like it.
If it's my biggest thing is, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Why bother?
Yeah, exactly.
Why bother? But on the same token, we just like shiny new stuff.
Yeah.
So we just got to go get it. But if you're going to do that, make sure you get custom built. Do not buy anything off a rack. Never buy off a rack. Never buy a putter off a rack. You know, the putting thing is taking massive leaps. And a good friend. Best friend of mine, I'm not just saying he's my best friend, he spent time with me and I've considered myself a very good putter. He's phenomenal. EM Golf, Edward Morton at EM Golf. I cannot go tell you this, go look at him, go watch his videos. When it comes to putters, it's the one stick that saves us shots.
Yeah.
So invest into a proper putter, invest into a custom built putter that is made for you. Do not be baffled by a nice looking Scotty Cameron. You know, we had a tour lad in who had a, well, he uses orcas now. He had a Scotty Cameron, you know, the loft and line, everything on the bottom was nowhere near what it was when we put it through the digital auditor. He's now playing an orca putter and sinking putts for fun because it's been built for him. I cannot stress it enough.
Putters. I think the sort of older ones, there's some beautiful bits of gear. Again, you'd be a fool to argue that.
Mm.
But the new ones...
The thing is, they've always made appealing-looking putters. And I'll stand by, you know, Scotty Cameron's on a shelf, look pretty. I'm not going to argue that. They're very good. But a lot of times, their quality and spec are miles out.
I'm not into these new insert line. I think they look cheap.
Hmm.
I've got a tad more single piece of carbon steel. You know, that's what I want from my putter, really. Only because I had some bad. I was a TaylorMade guy in Asia, and I had a couple of inserts fall out. And you just wonder, when the insert comes out, you wonder how many putts you've missed in the rounds before when you didn't know it was falling on the way. I refused to play an insert putter after that. Not that I'm a great putter, but because I'm a bad putter, I want my gear to be on my side.
Yeah, and I think, but that boils down to, you know, product creating characteristics. You know, I played my swing over the years when I was growing up around badly built clubs because the clubs weren't light for me. I didn't get fit. You know, I just kind of went into a shop and went, well, Titleist seem to be the best. I'll just buy them. Everyone seems to be playing them. They must know what they're talking about. And it's only, you know, another 20 years down the line that I've realised, actually, that's the stuff I was playing with back then was probably a polished turd rolled in glitter. You know, it's horrific. But, you know, I've had to learn the hard way, as have a lot of people. And, you know, that's not me here saying bad mouthing any brand out there whatsoever. It, you know, my argument in the whole of this has always been the custom build is more important than the custom fit. The custom fit is just merely part of the process.
I can't agree more. I'm going to ask you a couple of fun questions to wrap up. Because you're a golf gear man, and you grew up in one of the finest golfing parts of the world, that being the North Wales coast.
You know it.
No, I should ask you, where did you play when you were a kid? We grew up in the same neighbourhood.
So I started playing golf in the farmer's field at Old Colwyn, Nine Holer. Then moved on, started playing at Abergele. Ian Runcie there.
Ian Runcie? So I started my apprenticeship with Ian.
I did my work experience with him way back.
Me too.
I played some golf at Conway, Neffin.
Serious cracks. For anyone listening from overseas, if you want a golf holiday that no one else has had, North Wales coast. Conway hosting... Ladies Ryder Cup next year.
Yeah.
Not Solheim, Curtis Cup.
It's a hidden gem up there. Conway, Abergele, Neffin, Royal St David's. You know, all those around that north coast are absolute world beaters. And they're just hidden away. Go play them.
That was a lead into my actual question of what was your favourite club or clubs when you were a kid?
As in golf clubs or as in product?
As in sticks.
My favourite, I always kind of followed, like any young lad, the trends and the boys were using.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up watching, you know, Ola Tharball when he came in the early 90s and, you know, Greg Norman, late 80s, Nick Faldo, Ian Woosnam.
How old are you?
I'm old enough.
No, go on.
I'm 37. I used to watch these guys coming in.
I think I was just a bit before
in.
You know. Because I was like, I may have played junior golf against you.
You may well have.
Because I was a member of Abergele and we used to play the championship things against Old Colwyn, but you were probably at the same games when I was, you know, 15, 16. You'd be younger.
Well,
without wishing to blow my own trumpet, I doubt they'd have paired me against you.
No, I mean, probably not. I was still probably playing in the very small wee nippers section. But,
yeah, exactly. And they're not going to put someone you 28 handicapper against someone playing off, you know, 4 or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, 28, that was a long day ago.
Same
it
here.
Was, but beautiful anyhow. So, yeah, my actual favourite clubs growing up, I had, I started off with a very first set of Hippos. I had a set of Hippos in a green Penfold leather bag. They were the days, and I played my favourite ball. I felt like a millionaire when I found them on the course. Top Flight Zed Bellata.
Oh, do you know, I have an embarrassing moment that from Instagram this weekend. I took my kid to play a 9-hole exec course near me. Mm-hmm. And 95 yards, 6 hole, I got hole in one.
Nice.
Awesome. And my kid's going nuts. And I'm like, oh, no, it's fine. You know, we don't have to make a big deal. He's telling everyone. He's only 7.
And yeah, he doesn't realise.
We'll take a photo, send it to everyone. So I was like, okay, it's my little boy. I don't want to rain on his parade. I'm going for it. It's like, you need to put a ball in a trophy like your other one. I've only ever had one other hole in one. Third hole reel, 152 yards, 8 iron. And I've got a pristine tour ballata in there from back in the day. But we're on this exec course and I just took my shag bag out with me, which is mostly old golf balls I've used. But if I find one, it goes in there. It was a Top Flight XL distance.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. So I've got to get a trophy for my hole in one. I've got to buy it myself as well, just to keep my kid happy with a Top Flight in. That's what being exactly. a dad's about.
It's you know, but I've got two daughters, and one of them's mad into a golf. The other one just wants to sit on a horse all day, or you know, take picture selfies every 2 seconds. Golf is it's a great sport, and I just for me, you know, just going back to the equipment thing, I grew up and I bought into brands that pros were using, like a lot of guys do now, because I thought they were the best. If I knew now, if I knew then what I do now, I'd be you know, completely more, a lot more switched on and wise to it. But we all have to start somewhere, whether that's your £50 car boot sale find to going and investing, you know, quite a few hundred pounds into selling. Everyone's got to start somewhere. Just make sure when you do get to a decent level, or if you're just starting out now and you're of means and you can afford it, just go get custom built. Can't stress that enough.
Yeah, to wrap up, I think a golfer's equipment should not stop them enjoying the game. And if you're a beginner and you've got some clubs you found that are horrible, just spend a small amount of money, if that's all you've got, to get some gear that helps you enjoy golf more. If you're a decent golfer and you're, you know, shooting less than 100, get custom built. And do that with Orca. Alex, how can people find you?
Head to the website, orcagolf.com. Orca spelled O-R-K-A, we're not a whale. Orcagolf.com. You can find me on social medias, Alex Orca Golf. Followed by the hashtag Orcarites. You can go find us there. You can read up on plenty of forums about the brand. And look, anyone who's just got genuine interest, there's no obligation to buy. Don't feel like you can't approach me. If you've got any questions, whether it be about your current clubs, even if they're Orca or not, and you just want some general advice, reach out. We'll talk to anyone. We'll educate anyone. And happy to just keep growing the brown family.
And Alex, I'm going to put an Orca club in my bag sooner rather than later, and I'll talk to you about that.
No problem. Look forward to it.
Thank you very much for your time, Alex.
All the best, buddy. Take care. Speak soon.